morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. The 1960s were a formative decade for pop music around the world, and much of the period's innovation emerged from Britain. From the Rolling Stones to the Beatles, 1960s Britain produced a run of revolutionary music groups that has yet to be rivaled.
Gordon Thompson, a professor of music at Skidmore College, has written Please Please Me, 60s British Pop Inside Out, that explores the many aspects of this remarkable period in music history.
Gordon joins us today, along with his special guest, Mitch Murray, an influential songwriter responsible for such hits as How Do You Do It by Jerry and the Pacemakers. We'll be addressing Gordon's class later today. Gordon and Mitch, thanks so much for joining us on the Roundtable.
Thanks for having us. It's going to be fun.
Yeah. It certainly is going to be fun, much like the music of that day. Now, I have to start with you, Gordon. You're a professor of music at Skidmore College, and that apparently gives you the right to write this book.
It was fun. You know, one of the fun things that happens when you teach at a place like Skidmore is sometimes they ask you to do unusual things.
Yeah.
So I got a chance to teach in London in 1996, and they said, well, teach something that takes, you know, advantage of using London as a place to teach. So I said, okay, what would be fun to teach? Well, I think I know something about British pop music from the 60s, so I think I'll do a class on British pop music. Yeah, well, I thought I knew something about British pop music, but you find as you start working on this stuff that there's a lot you don't know.
And
that's actually what kind of like inspired the book, was all of these things I thought I knew that weren't quite true.
And
because there's this whole aspect of the music industry that tries to project one image of what the music is like and what it's about. And then there is the reality of what actually happens on the ground, what happens in the studio, how all of that stuff happens. So I think I need to describe what's going on in the infrastructure here.
One of the terms that I wasn't familiar with that I came across in researching was Mercy Beat.
Mercy
Beat. Can you talk about that?
Mercy Beat was, in some ways, a total fiction. It was what happens in 1963, and actually you could say that Mitch was part of Mersey Beat.
Yeah.
Has nothing to do with Merseyside. Merseyside is what you call the River Delta area around Liverpool.
Right.
So you suddenly have the Beatles and Jerry and the Pacemakers and the Searchers and all of these bands that come out of, and Cilla Black and all these people that come out of Liverpool. So suddenly they're flooding the airwaves, and people are saying, oh, there must be something, and there's some Mersey kind of sound to it. Well, some of that was true, but much of it was fiction.
Yeah. Well, it's amazing to me because really, in reading the book, it's this sound that comes over to America, and you even talk about a DJ, I believe, who recognizes that the Beatles sound and their first album is going to be a chart breaker and will be around for a long time. So really, this sound that has come out of Britain has really revolutionized music at the time.
Right. Well, I think one of the interesting things about British pop music in this era, and I'll let Mitch talk about this in a bit, but is that the British heard American pop music, and for a long time were trying to imitate American pop music, sometimes successfully, sometimes not very successfully.
Mm-hmm.
But they kind of saw it from a distance. So they tended to see all American pop music kind of like on a similar kind of plane. And they took bits from here and here and another place, and they kind of amalgamated them into something brand new. So one of the things I think when you talk about the Beatles, you've got the Beatles doing, who are basically a rockabilly band. You know, two guitars, bass, yeah, drums, and, you know, even with George Harrison, you know, he plays like Carl Perkins. That was one of his models for playing guitar. But they're doing music by the Shirelles and the Donnays. They're doing Arthur Alexander tunes. They're doing all of these disparate kinds of American tunes that had nothing to do with rockabilly, but they're doing them in that rockabilly kind of format. And then throw in on top of that Everly Brothers harmonies. And you get something brand new.
A little bit of doo-wop in there, too.
Well, you get those responsorial kinds of singing, yeah, from groups like the Shirelles.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, in fact, they do a number of Shirelles tunes on those early albums. Baby, It's You. You know, Boys, which is always interesting. You know, have Ringo Starr singing Boys. You hear the Shirelles sing it. It's pretty clear what they're singing about. Ringo, you got to wonder what's going on there.
Well, maybe this is a good time to come over to Mitch Murray. And Mitch, I have to say this, and forgive me for saying it this way, but how do you do it? Okay, that was me.
That was your best line, wasn't it?
That was my best line of the day. It really was, and I apologize. It was terrible.
Not at all.
It really is interesting.
You'll be hearing from General Burgoyne very soon. He rides in here. He's my lawyer and representative.
I've really done it now. No, really, that was your first major songwriting success,
yes,
right?
Yes.
How do you do it? And picking up from what you said about the Beatles, I was interested to read, and I don't know if this is true. Maybe you can help me with this, but they wanted, I guess George Martin wanted them to record this as their follow-up to Love Me Do, But it says here their lack of enthusiasm was clear in the recording, and so this song that you wrote went to Jerry and the Pacemakers.
Well, actually, you're not quite right there. The Love Me Do was How Do You Do It was going to be the very first single.
The first single, okay.
And Love Me Do was recorded at the same time. How Do You Do It was the first thing they recorded at EMI for release. And as you'll read in Gordon's book, I had to be convinced that I'd let a song like that go to a new group, because they were, now they're the Beatles. In those days, they were the Beatles.
Right.
What do you mean? And you can't even spell it? What's going on? Right. And Dick James said, I said, who are they? And he said, it's a band. It's a group. I said, you mean a group, a vocal group? Or, and he said, no, they do everything. I said, you're really asking me as a publisher to let my song go to an unknown group from up north?
Oh, boy.
And he said, at the time I hadn't signed a publishing contract, which means that the song is mine, nobody can take it away, they can record it, but they can't release it unless I say so.
Mm-hmm.
This makes me sound terribly arrogant, but that was only because I was. And anyway.
Well, thanks for clearing that up.
Yeah, thank you. So, cut a long story short, a few days after the recording, I listened to the acetate of that, and I really thought they'd messed it up deliberately.
Really? Mm. You think they did it on purpose?
Yeah, I think they've admitted that ever since. But if you think about it, we're talking about Lennon and McCartney here.
Yeah.
What do they want with my stuff? You know what I mean? It's... And yet, you know, I mean, George Martin, you'll read in Please Please Me, George Martin said to them, look, when you can write a song as good as this, I'll record it. But until then, this is what you'll do. Now, Nowadays, I could be embarrassed by that if I wasn't so arrogant. But it actually made sense in the context of the fact that this is a new group from Liverpool who had no track record, nothing.
Right.
And there was this song that George really knew was a number one hit. So that's the way it worked out. But it worked out really well for all of us, because the record, I wouldn't give permission for it to be let out, and the Beatles didn't want it out anyway. So Love Me Do became the A-side. I'd have ended up as a B-side of Love Me Do, you know. Love Me Do became the A-side. How Do You Do It was recorded by Jerry the Pacemakers and went to number one. Started my career off, because I was then able to write his follow-up, and it, one thing led to another. And the Beatles did okay. You might have heard of them. They're still,
I think so.
Still quite well-known names.
Cindy, you're already discovering why I had some trepidation about allowing Mitch to come along today. In fact, this actually applies here, because when he originally went in to see George Martin with How Do You Do It, he was accompanying another songwriter who was going in to sell his songs. And, of course, whose songs get picked up and sold?
Well, that's only because Barry Mason wrote such crappy songs.
we'll tell
us how you really feel.
That was after a few years of improvement, too.
Well, the truth is, Mitch knows how to write songs.
He does.
I mean, and not only that, but you wrote a book on how to write songs, and I noted that Sting,
yes,
when he was 12, read your book, and it's been the inspiration for him.
That's
he says
right.
You're his mentor. So how do you write songs?
No
Come
idea.
On, in one sentence.
I could write books about how to write songs, but I can't write songs.
Sure you can. And really, there's been some amazing songs. People might not know. The Night That Chicago Died is another one of your songs. What's your favorite one there, Sarah?
Billy Don't Be a Hero.
Billy Don't Be a Hero.
That's one of my favorites, too.
But what is it? Is there a hook in the song? Is it the lyric itself? Ultimately the musical accompaniment?
I have an idea about this.
Go
one
ahead.
Of the great things about Mitch's songs is that you can be maybe 10 seconds into the song and it's already burned into your brain.
Into your brain.
You remember that song. He has this way of, especially in this era, he writes these songs that just kind of like immediately click with your subconscious and you say, oh, I know that song. Even if you haven't heard it before, you know that song. He added a great gift, still has a great gift for kind of making these immediate kinds of contacts in music.
So who are your influences?
I'd rather listen to Gordon talk about the
other.
I like that.
Well.
He does it beautifully.
But well, he didn't call you arrogant nearly as many times as you did.
No.
It's a British self-deprecating thing.
Exactly.
It's wonderful. Well, so you must have had influences, or that you're something. Is it just a gift? Is it something that sort of discovered?
Yeah, it's a knack. And the influences for me was music of the 30s. I'm mad about music of the 30s. And my father gave me his record collection of 78s, and it was things like Rudy Valley and Guy Lombardo, and very tuneful stuff. And the English at the time really weren't turning out anything fabulous. The Americans had always been the very best and still are. I mean, it is your medium, and you're writers and performers and magicians. And musicians.
Some are.
Our magicians are okay, but our musicians
define the whole art and still do. The British invasion was a blip. A little bit of Britain getting lucky for a short time. But I think anybody who doesn't realise that is fooling themselves. The Americans, it's your art form and you do it really well. Apart from me, of course, but I mean all the others.
You are the exception. Well, we're talking with Mitch Murray, songwriter, and Gordon Thompson, professor of music at Skidmore College. He's written Please Please Me, 60s British Pop, Inside and Out. And gentlemen, I'm wondering, the music business itself, what it was like in the 60s. In reading, I discovered that the real success was in selling the records, getting those discs distributed in the distribution.
Right.
Whereas today, we may have moved away from that, obviously. But what, we'll start with you, Gordon. Go ahead.
Well, actually, it's interesting because, you know, it's great that we've got Mitch here today because Mitch still sits on the Performing Rights Society Board.
That's the equivalent of ASCAP and BMI.
Right. Yeah. And, which are licensing organizations, right, for music?
Yes, they collect money for us.
And we were just talking about this in the lobby, about, you know, the changes that have been taking place and how digital downloads have radically altered the way that we consume music.
Sure.
And the way that songwriters are remunerated for their work. It's a trying time for many songwriters in that regard.
It's true.
Things have changed dramatically. Back in those days, it was very much hands-on and, forgive me, but kind of fly by the seat of your pants. There's a lot of folks who are kind of learning out how to do
these
it.
These are Armani pants, if you don't mind.
Well, they're very nice pants.
Thank you.
You had Denmark Street, which was kind of like the focus of the music publishing industry in London back in the 60s. They were scrambling. You know, they were just, well, what works? So that's why when you listen to British pop music from the 60s, there's such variety. You can hear Tony Hatch tune performed by Petula Clark, like Downtown. And on the same street, you know, have Les Reed and Gordon Mills doing It's Not Unusual. And then having, you know, then a rock band playing. The Kinks are recording on that street. The Who are recording on that street. The Rolling Stones were recording on that street, too. It's a short one-block street. Amazing amount of music poured out of that one little neighborhood.
It was a studio. About the size, half the size of this, a very
really?
Small studio, and it was considered a pretty crummy demo studio.
Mm-hmm. Technologically speaking.
But it was cheap. You
right.
could sit there all night and play, you know, and so the Stones used to use Regent Sound all the time.
Right.
They used to build up, they got their sounds, they sort of hammered away until they got the right sound.
Yeah.
But, I mean, after a while, they had enough money to go to much better studios.
Well, that's an interesting development, too, because one of the things that happens is that they move out of Regent Sound Studio, and where they go to is RCA Studios in Hollywood. So one of the interesting fictions I talked about before is that all of this stuff was recorded in London. Rolling Stones and The Who went to Hollywood to record because they had better equipment than London.
That's right.
Well, it's amazing. I can't believe we're actually running out of time. But Mitch, you write your song. It's the first success. Is it a rocket ship? Is it a whirlwind for you? I mean, what
you
was
know,
it
you'd
like?
Expect you have your first number one hit, and you've been trying. I mean, it was fantastically fast for me, and I was pulling out all the stops. I was quite ruthless. And in a year, I had my first hit after a year of writing songs. And you'd expect to be exhilarated and celebrating, and all it is relief. It's like, about time.
You're
God,
right.
Thank God, at last. It's very. And every time I had a hit, that was the feeling. It was never, it was always that relief.
And there's also the feeling that, oh, how am I going to follow this one up?
Yes. Yeah, you're full
next?
Of anxieties, and eventually, when you've got enough money behind you, it's not as important as that.
Mm-hmm.
But I tell you what, this book sums it all up so well, and it's not in the least academic. It's put together, not in my opinion, it's put together so well. And I found it fascinating, even though I was there, I couldn't be everywhere. So this is actually telling me a lot of the things that were going on at the same time my life was developing. So I loved it. So I was happy to be here today to support Gordon.
It was a joy writing the book because I got to meet a lot of really good people, fun people, informative people who made a great impact on Western music.
And you're an insider now.
maybe not.
I was trying to push you. I was trying to push you in that direction.
He's the only sober one out of all of us.
Well, Please Please Me, 60s British Pop, Inside and Out, is printed by Oxford University Press. We've been talking with Gordon Thompson, the author, and Mitch Murray, songwriter. Guys, thanks so much for joining us today.
Been a pleasure.
Pleasure.